6713, just M Waterston, reel 9.
Mr. Waterston, reel 9. The Germans invaded Belgium and Holland on the 10th of May. Mr. Waterston, do you recall what you were doing at that time?
That was the time when we were rushed up to that aerodrome. You know what I told you about? When it was a false call. You know, when we went up there and I didn't know where it was. It was a canny journey, mind. We went rushing up, and then the next day the battalion, HQ, and the HQ and all them came bashing up as if there was a war on.
Was this a parachute scare?
It was a parachute scare, aye. But the people in the village didn't know, and your boys was all quiet and everything. And then we came back. And it was then when we prepared to load our trucks up to go into Belgium. But as you said there about the boxing match. Ah, you can remember the boxing match being on. But it was on, I think it was at Lille, where it was on. And there was competition between the Norfolk Regiment and the Guards. Frankie Wilson won the lightweight. About 11, 12 stone in the weight, you know. He'd. And we had a lad called. His name's going. Oh, I'm hopeless. He was a corporal in our platoon, 16th platoon. But that lad went up into action with us and we never seen him again. Nobody's ever heard or seen on him since.
Did you ever meet the general that commanded the division, Martel? Did you meet him or see him?
The only time we saw any high-ranking officers was that time when I told you we went to come through the wood, you know, when we came back from... We were supposed to... Ian English was supposed to go down to Armitage to find us some rest camp, you know, like a rest place. But when we got there, it was all bombed, and we had to turn round and come back. And when we turned round and came back, we came through a great big wood. And there was a convoy of Middlesex Regiment. I still can't understand that, like that. It was queer. I think they were fifth columnists then, like, and I always say it. When we came back, the Downs came through, this convoy came through, the blokes wearing uniforms that had never been used, brand new uniforms, packs and all that, were not stuffed and all that. You know, we were badly on. If we got a pack, we had to blink and scrub it and blank over it and stiffen it up and everything. And in the centre of the wood was Lord Gorton. We took a salute there. And that was the day before he came back to England.
Can we go back to the German invasion of Belgium and Holland? You say you packed up and you went into Belgium. What date would that be?
The 15th.
Do you recall the journey?
It was quiet, very quiet. We were just there. The roads was empty and everything. We never had any trouble from Air Force and out. Only... I think it'd be about the 14th when the aeroplane, the only time we had any trouble with the aeroplane, and everybody raced to try and catch it. And it went down them, you know where Gondicourt was, and the village next to it. It went down them fields down there and came down, was brought down.
Were the Belgian civilians out on the roadsides?
No, the Belgians, not the Belgians, the French, they didn't seem to be bothered at all. So we went up into Belgium, and you boys, you never saw any Belgians, really. They're in their houses and they're blocked in. And we went up to as far as Grimont. And at Grimont, we took up positions on three bridges. One bridge where I was on, the number one section was on. It was like the main road through to Lille, you know, through to the Belgian hot Dutch border. Centre one was the main road, you might see, from Brussels, right through. And the convoys were flying past there. And that's where was the top of a great big, there was a great big bunk up. And we went up there and we couldn't get any billets up there, and they fetched us back down to these toll bridges. And there was another one, just a little one, further along, and we had a section along there. Now, Bob was with that section. And we were along there, and I think we were there. We got there in the morning. And we did about 5 centuries. That changed about 5 centuries. And we had convoy after convoy and nuns and what have you. There's a convent really up at the top, you know, over the back of the hill. And I swear to this day that the convoys was all fifth column has gone through us.
Were the convoys of what? British troops? Belgian troops?
No, the convoys of nuns and civilians. Eh? And we were there, stuck there, and we had asked for passports. And I always remember to this day, a lad called Dambi was in my section. He pulled a bloke up, and he didn't like the look of him. He had no passport. He didn't like the look of him. So he's going to have the first known. He bound him one, got him by the scruff of the neck and rushed him round to our HQ, you know, just was on the promenade, like a promenade, you know, between the two bridges. And banged him into the company office, and we heard later that the interpreters, you know, that we had there, had got together and said, "Oh, we haven't got time for them." And we were just tucking them away and putting them up against the wall. But it was only one occasion like that I heard of.
Who was putting them up against the wall? Were the Belgians
they were Belgian interpreters or not, you know. They said they hadn't time for them at the, you know, that because they were expecting thousands, and which I think that there was. There must have been a lot there. Because the one bloke who stood tall there was a sergeant major in our company, and I asked him his business. And he said, I'm looking round to see where's the best place to put the explosives. He says, we're going to blow the bridges up, man. He says, you're talking quite normal to us, like him. Or not. And he says, you'll not have to stop here very long. He says, time you got yourselves a wee back out. Well, at that point, that part of the day, it was just getting dusk. And I had to gun along. I tell you, the Lance Corporal again, I had to gun along and fetch that far up section in. And it was about a mile and a half. And here they were in a little dugout, like, you know, and they'd been playing cards, and Bob had cleaned them all out. When he went to Mad, he had about 1,000 francs for them. And I brought them back, and as I brought them back, the blinking convoy was just gone away without us. had just gotten away without us, so we marched. I followed, you know, I followed the direction. There was about 8 of us. And we marched about 10 mile, I think it was. And this is why, maybe as you've heard me say before, well, I never seen any trucks in and out after, you know, on the way back. When we got back to about the next village, I think it was, they were camped up in a school. And we played up there, we built it there for a while. And then we did get it on the trucks the next morning to rush back to Lens, you know, to Vimy. And it was a long journey. A long journey it was. We went about 10, well, we didn't go 10 mile. And as the coach truck went out in the ditch, and it was loaded, you know, with stuff. Well, with us being the last platoon, the 16th platoon being the last one, you know, on the convoy, and being late, you know, for the... The first two platoons went carried straight on, and they left Muggins, you know, to get the Downs out the ditch. And we struggled on nearly all day, I think, trying to get that out. We roped and not pulling it out. It was full, you know, and we got it out finally anyway. And when they got it out, you boys, they're off. Of course, we were left. We stand there, so that's where we had to walk. So they keep saying to me, we've got trucks from here and trucks for the... I didn't get any truck. I says, we left to lift the blink. And I says, when we got the coach truck on the road, you boys, Harry Rondry and them, you boys, are we off to catch the company? But anyway, we finally met up with them in about... Just as they were going to Vimy.
The civilians, can we just come back to them? Were they crowding the roads, refugees?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
What were the sights you were seeing?
When we were marching back there, that from Belgium, there was tons of blinking refugees on each side of the road. And you boys, the aeroplanes was coming down, and we were just jumping into the blinking, into the hedges, and women and bands were screaming and all that, and they were coming down. They were wiping the blink, and half of them that got in the ditches, they didn't get out. Gee, you boys, it was a sacrilege that was. When we said it, oh, we were amazed. Oh, goodness gracious, what are we doing here? And to tell her that I had a job of keeping the section together. To getting back, and I tell you what, there's most of the times we were running to get back. We got back, I had to nearly, I think it was Lens where we got back to, and then we had to walk back up to the Vimy.
What did you feel like when you saw, you know, towards the Germans themselves, when you saw these sights? Did you have any feelings of anger or anything like that?
All the time, just ever since we were called up, we never liked the Germans at any stage. When my first sighting of them was, you boys, let's run and get back over. I says, I'm going to nip them down. I says, they're not going to go any further as far as I'm concerned. And I stood in a trench, a little trench. That's a long time after the other, 3 weeks after.
So you got back to Vimy. What were you doing there?
Well, we took up a position in Vimy Ridge. That was when the 11th Battalion came across there. We were on our right with the 6th Battalion. And, you know, when we went up to Vimy Ridge, you know, on that trip, you know, behind the monument, on the left-hand side, where little Vimy was, that's where we went in. And then we took up a position along that wood along the back there. And then every time we took up a position, However, we'll have to hurry up to gone forward and all that. And we hardly got settled down in there. I think that's where Andy Acton fetched one of them aeroplanes down. One of them Lysanders, you know. They were looking for troops, you know. They used to come out and looking for you. Little Lysander plane. They used to come out, and if you only said any movement, you boys, within 10 minutes, you bet the Stukas were there after you. That was when we went through Vimy Ridge, onto the Dessart Road.
What condition you were in at this point?
Well, I tell you what. Tired, worn, footsore. We'd never had any decent grub. But it was a couple of days. It wasn't until we come back from Wallace that we got a decent meal. Anyway, we went down the Dessart Road. CEO was pushing us on all the way. We went down there, and that was where the first contact of the Germans was. The same company had been leading us, and that's where they caught the prisoners. Same company. And we went through them. You know that little cemetery we went in where they were fighting, they had that surrounded when we went by. And the officer's idea, the colonel's idea, was for us to belt on up to Wallace. But we got as far as the plot of the chateau, down at the bottom there, you know, there was a road that went one way and another one went up past the cemetery and that. Because some of the Germans had escaped the ring, and he made us tack up. We went laid around all outskirts, you know, to hem them in. And as I say, that was the occasion when the two Germans went out of the cornfield with their hands raised. And we saw he was carrying a blinking, you know, and then Tatey was in Butley's hand.
Grenade.
One of them grenades. And I said to this lad, Carl Sables, belonged to Dipton, concert, you know, Dipton. I says, Sables, could thou hit him? He says, fire at him. I says, it doesn't matter whether he hits me or not, as long as the scares him. Anyway, he was a crack shot, you know. He must have hit his hand exactly. He did, he must have hit his hand exactly. Because he, once when we were training down at Dan's, you know, fire no course, what we might say. I believe I told you about that. We couldn't fire about the weapons with that much sand in them. I give this lad a fire order from the dunes, you know, some petrol cans. I give a lad his fire order from the top of a dune, a big high dune, and the Captain Goodenough was there. And he hit it straight away. He says, boy, he says, I spot on that. He says, that was exactly Moss. He says, when that fire order was great. And I tried to get the Bren gunners to fire on it at the same time, but this gentleman could walk. Captain Goodness said, that was a good fire. It was a good fire order, that.
Did you take any prisoners at Wallace?
No, not at Wallace. We took the prisoners. And C Company came back, straight back to England with them. Marched them prisoners back to England.
You saw them do that?
Oh, they left before we carried on up to Wallace. And we cut. You see, C Company was first, B Company and A Company was that when we went down the Dessart Road. But when C Company got engaged with the enemy or not, we went right through them. And it ended up that me and Mr. Deeds was leading the way. And we got up from there and we were supposed to get on the trucks. Because we had a platoon truck there, you know, and it PUs. No, he says, I want you to walk, you know, the same as you did, come down, one at each side of the road, had a man out in front and each side, you know, single file. So away we went up to Wallace. And do you know, it's 15 kilometres from that chateau up to Wallace. Oh boy. Bob says, he says, 15 kilometres, he says, we measured every blinking mile. And we went up there, and if you remember, we went over about three crossroads. And when we come to the third crossroad, the French interpreter was there. I believe he got the Memphis services there. I didn't know what for. He pulled us away from our position, took us up, shouting, this, Germans in the village, Germans in the village. And we went up there, and yeah, boy, that we all the rest of the battalion joined up, you know what I say. Got stuck there, pulled us back, and we doubled from there up that bunk where the bus stopped, you know, doubled up there to a position up there at Wallace. He sent B Company, A Company and B Company, he sent them round to the next crossroad along to the right, and they came up that road round the back. And I was dying to get out the bus that time, you know, Harry. Dying to get out the bus, and the English wouldn't let us get out, because he knew, my memory was working there. I was there. I could tell them where every man stood. But he wouldn't let us get out.
What was happening to you? Were the Germans retaliating at this point?
The Germans wasn't. We chased them back. As we came through the village that time, there was a dispatch rider, a German motorbike man, been shot. Because apparently our carrier platoon had gone up in front of us. They had kept on going. And they had pressed on and shoved the light, you know, the advance guard of the Germans back. That's why I like him as a fella and all that. I can get on champion with him, but when he's told me two different tales, and I didn't like either of them. He said he went back at 1 o'clock in the morning, went up to Wallace to fetch the troops out. I down to tell him he was a liar, because he didn't. The blinking Indian troops came. When we got up to Wallace, he was gone about waving his stick. Get these cars and that off the PUs and get them off the road. Get them off the road. Spread them out. And we can see the planes going round and round and round and round and out. Somebody says, that's the 6th Battalion getting some stick. And which it was a fact and all. But part of the fighting down there, the live of the battalion was there and all, see? And they chased the Germans back right away around. And the tanks, that's where the tanks came from, to attack us. Well, while we took up this position, my position was, you know where the water tank is there? Well, my position was with my section. I had 6 blokes on there. Mr. Days was on there with us. And he said to me, he says, clip your men there, Corporal. The Bren gun was in the middle. Smacker Smith, Darby. Norman Thompson was out on me left. A lad called Noble was out on me right. And now Bob and Jerry. Oh, Bob and where else was I? What they call him? Oh, Bob can remember him because Mr. Days sent old Bob back to the truck to get the 2-inch mortar. No, Bob says, are we going to advance under smoke like Mr. Days? He says, no. He says, we're going to bomb them, the enemy out in the front there, because where we laid out, there was out the wood on the left, and just out of the bank, you could see down into Wallace, you know, Wallace village, And there were swarms of blinking tanks. Well, the whole German, we thought it was the whole German army there, which it was. It was best patterned anyway. And, well, we were watching. Somebody says that's the 6th Battalion, Garrett. After they finished over there, in English, the tale was there were three planes leaving there at Kumawa and started bombing us. Why, man, a Stoker only carried one bomb. And there was only three of them, and they bombarded the blinking 6th Battalion. So what? Where the devil did the bombs come from? They did us. They dropped about... I bet they dropped about 8 bombs along our lines where the 16th and 17th platoon was. And I mean, Sergeant Hicks and all them, Sergeant Cranny and all them was all blinking bodily wounded and all that. Sergeant Hicks was killed.
So you were attacked at some stage of the battle by... Stukas.
The Stukas came from all over the blinking... I bet there was at least 6 or 12 Stukas came at us. Because the lads, the Maiblet lads, the scared stripped straight away. They run straight to where that wall was, you know. That's why all the people was all down that wall, seeking cover. And they left the brain going. I'll tell you what, I give them a fire order before the... That I was giving them a fire order before we attacked with its bombers. And he says, keep sticking. I says, well, give it some mad gas then. Well, I'm not going to give it any mad gas. He says, I didn't think I was going to strip it down. He says, with all them in front of us. I says, well, if they didn't want to get killed, they let they. Well, he says, I didn't know what to do. So I slid up beside them. Just at the gas regulator on the Downs, and put it back. Says, there, no fire it. And the Downs come out there, and the off leg shut.
Was it a frightening thing that...
Definitely. What do you mean?
That's the first time
we'd been under fire. It was scared stiff. Yeah, boys, there was all sorts dropping in front of us. And I'm thinking, sure, I see somebody's head there. Frankie Hadaway was killed there. There was a good big... I was sure it was somebody's head that dropped down in front of me because it had my helmet was there now. Oh, God.
What was so frightening? What was it?
They come over twice and dropped bombs on us. They dropped bombs twice on us. From the direction of Arasai, you know, across where we came up the road. They came across. They dropped bombs on us. And as they finished dropping bombs on us, the circle drove the way around and they came round and they strafed us. Mind, they strafed us and strafed us and strafed us. And when all of them got run away, I picked up the brain gun and I run to that wood. And I got stuck on the barbed wire with the brain gun. I ripped all my trousers up here. And I had them trousers like that till I was the first year I was bringing well prisoner away. Them trousers with that hair all on like that. A pair of gaiters, and I used to put my gaiters on to keep my trousers together. And I run in there, and I had 4 magazines with us. I picked 4 magazines up, and I fired them 4 magazines at these planes as they were coming down, you know, with a brain gun. And I fired the whole 4 magazines, and they started to get their attention under them, and then they started strafing me, so I went deeper into the wood, and I couldn't get the blinking brain gun off the gas regulator and that, you know, in the tripod, was fastened on the blinking barbed wire fence, and I couldn't get it off. So when they stopped tracing the... And everybody starts shouting and all that from the side, you know, the road. And hey, the blinking CO. Get down here, get down there. He was going about waving his stick. And I tell you what, he sent the whole of the battalion down that road And you've been, the Germans was waiting for them to when they went down. I was just saying, mentioned it last night with Vic Donoghue and us. I just said to him, he says, aye. He says, boys, he says, we had half a store up. He says, when we went down there, I says, you both A Company and HQ Company, Johnny Curry and all them, the all matched, walked straight into Jerry's arms. They were just waiting for them.
Who was the battalion commander?
Pate. Colonel Bart. That's what it was, Bart.
Beard,
wasn't it? Beard, aye. Tall, thin bloke.